Bit of silence brought to you by the fact that Buc-ee's is not advertising right now. Find out what's going on over there.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah, that's because of you.
Because of me? Yeah. You, yeah, I turned you into a saint, and now we lose Buc-ee's.
No, I was always saying how great they are, and you were like, oh, really? Got me.
Well, if they're no longer a sponsor, maybe I was right.
We don't know that.
Oh, we don't, do we? You certainly are spreading the rumor.
Be Larry down in accounting, slowing up all the paychecks and stuff. Oh, that guy gives me the creeps. When you see him, doesn't he just? I just run the other way when I see Larry down in accounting. Ugh.
When you keep bringing up the sainthood thing, I just need to ask.
Yes.
Did you ever explain why?
Yeah. Why I do hospice care?
So you do it all the time?
No. I just signed up for it. I just started. I go through 2 days.
It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, Ursula.
Oh, did we lose another sponsor?
I'll tell you, I'm on the schedule to talk about it at some point.
Yeah.
All right? Crazy outfit you have on. Is that for some religious thing? Okay, here we go.
So much for sainthood. Yeah. You're back.
I know. John comes back to reality mighty fast.
She's Filipino, Tom. I don't know. There's something going on. Okay. All righty. Hey, congratulations. First time I've ever seen this occur.
Yeah.
A government program is going away.
That's right, because it worked. That's the great thing about it.
The air quality is
much cleaner than it was in 1982 when we put in these emissions tests. It's cars have gotten better. I mean, everything about this is positive. Vehicle technology, improved motor fuels, and the testing program for emissions is going away. Now, it's still all good through this year, unfortunately. So you have to get your 2019 emissions. But after that, starting in 2020, you will no longer have to have your emissions tested because things worked. Things got better.
No, it had nothing to do with the government. It had to do with Tom, it's technology. It's the catalytic converter. The introduction of the catalytic converter,
which might
unleaded gasoline, led to less emissions. It had nothing to do with the state was sticking a pipe in the back of your tailpipe and leaning in and asking to see different things.
It might have encouraged technology to advance farther because of what government demands were.
We were just testing it. We were not trying to change the technology. The technology changed, and then luckily government realizes, because the guys stand out there and most of the cars that probably were polluters are now junkers and gone.
Yes.
So it just, all of a sudden the cars that are rolling in there, they don't need to be tested because their emissions are fine.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually made it under the wire because they don't test 1988. And they don't test 1965.
Yeah, because nobody. I mean, the quantity of cars in 1965, they're still on the road.
Because I don't have a catalytic converter, and I'm not going to have one in either one of those things. So it's like if you had one that was emitting enough, you sort of fell into a small crack there. But it's good. Government goes away and gets a little smaller for the first time. Good.
Yay.
Nye.
I heard a funny joke on Saturday at that Roanoke conference. It was the guy Charlie Cook from National Review. He goes, to give you some idea of the power of incumbents, just look at the fact that in Jaws 1 and Jaws 2, it is the same mayor.
Wow.
I got to laugh with Republicans because the thing was in Jaws. Let me explain the joke to you. All those people die in Jaws 1, right? Horrible thing. The beaches are left open. The mayor was incompetent.
Okay.
And the same mayor is in there on Jaws 2. You never solved the shark problem. And you got the same guy. It works with people that are enlightened.
Yeah, that's right. When you have to explain a joke, what happens to the joke, John?
You have to just think less of the audience. That's what you have to do.
Well, they are Republicans.
All righty. On patrol, the enforcer of the D.C. plastic straw ban. Oh, boy. The person's out there making sure that restaurants are complying. And a lot of times the person walks in and says, hey, I see you're serving. You got plastic straws. And people are like, I didn't know that. We had to do anything about that.
Yeah.
So they're collecting them. And are they fining people now?
Well, no. They're warning them. In July, they start fining them up to $800. So now the guy goes around and says, oh, and the way he tests, he bends the end. Mm-hmm. If you can bend the end, that means that it's a plastic. They call that a telltale sign. I would think he'd just look at it and tell if it's plastic or not. But he bends it and he sort of notifies these people. And it turns out he's at like Union Station, and everybody on the top floor at Union Station, they're all aware of it. You know, they're on top of it. And they But you go to the, I don't know if it sounds like the basement or whatever, the underling organizations or outlets like Lotus Express, a Chinese food joint. They looked at it like, what? Uh-huh. You have to get rid of these. So some people are more attuned to what's going on.
Did they laugh and cough like that?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Believe me, I would not try to imitate anything Chinese. Unlike you, John, that's one of our differences.
That's the beauty of
but
me.
They are recognizing the fact that this is something that's becoming popular. It's now 15 jurisdictions have outlawed plastic straws, uh-huh. including our fair city of Seattle. A lot of coastal cities, they say, in southern Florida and California. It's going the way of the dodo bird, those straws.
That's right. Well, nice.
And a lot of corporations are getting rid of them, too, like Starbucks, just willfully getting rid of them.
Well, not willfully. They're getting rid of them because they're going to get fined if they don't have them. Did they say they were ahead of it?
Well, no, they're designing. Remember, they were designing cups so that you don't even need straws. So they're getting rid of the idea of straws completely.
Right, and then a small group of disabled people said it's not fair to
That's
us.
Right.
We need straws.
Yes, in fact, and they are keeping. You can have a quantity of straws available for the disabled that, mm-hmm. that need that. They do say one of the ironies of this, they mentioned in a Starbucks store in downtown, they threw away huge bags of straws. They say that kind of defeats the purpose. So one of the suggestions is you should send them to Maryland or Virginia because they don't have a straw ban in effect yet. The problem with straws, why are they so problematic recyclable? They're too small to recycle. So the one proposal is, what if we got millions of these plastic straws together, and if you could bundle them all together, mm-hmm. would that be enough to maybe allow for recycling since that's not happening? The question then, John, that you always raise is, why it's only 1% of the pollution? Why are we focusing on straws?
1% from us or 1% in the world?
I don't know.
It's probably the world.
That. Whatever. It's
right.
Yeah.
A little tiny island like Sri Lanka.
1% of the trash. Oh, I see. In these two rivers near D.C.
Oh,
still they pose a problem because they can't be recycled and all this. But the argument here, and I know you, I'll let you make your argument.
Putting in perspective that the United States is not a polluter of the seas the way other places are. But
that's right. Like Sri Lanka, apparently.
Five times. Same,
yeah, more than all of the United States.
Yes.
Yeah, in terms of pollution or in terms of straws?
Not just plastic. Five times as much as the U.S. combined. Sri Lanka and then China and then Vietnam and then Indonesia.
Well, see, China
dumping
makes
plastic.
Sense.
Right, dumping plastic
huge.
Into the air. Well, Sri Lanka is only 80 million people. Yeah. I mean, you get plenty of people there.
That's right. But the idea here, they say, is they acknowledge that, yeah, straws aren't the forefront. But what they do by banning straws, they raise awareness of a problem with plastic. And so they say that's all to the good.
Right, sure. And the plastic is actually better for the environment than paper. And better for the environment than cotton bags, but it doesn't matter because
not in this particular case in terms of pollution.
A pollution paper, in the water or pollution of recycling?
The pollution in the water, the plastic is what's tripping up a lot of the aquatic life.
So if I decide I want to grow a tree and I'm going to take those trees and turn them into paper bags, and these are trees grown just for that, I have to pour a whole bunch of fertilizer to get the tree to grow fast enough so that I can then harvest the tree and make a plastic bag. The fertilizer rolls off of the topsoil and down into the water and then causes additional problems on top of the aquatic life because you're changing the acidic balance, and therefore you have a far more detrimental effect upon the water because of fertilizers from growing trees for paper bags than you do with people taking a plastic bag and possibly just garbaging it into the ocean or for it getting there. Really, you have to affect the person who has the straw who throws it in the river outside of D.C. or get the person who's taking the plastic bag and throwing it so that it blows down the street and then goes into the water and wastewater and then down out into wherever it's going to go. So that's the human element is the people that are not throwing it out properly. But if you really want to talk about the true effect upon nature, you would get rid of the paper bag and you get rid of the cotton bag. But that's not, because it's much easier to say plastic is bad.
This statement brought to you by the American plastics industry.
This brought to you by people that actually think. Todd Meyer, that's often Todd Meyer from Washington Policy Center.
Yeah.
He's going up to Ottawa to make that same argument. No, he's not paid for. The difference is he's not bought and paid for by the plastic industry. He just looks at the numbers. He's a number guy. He said this. I said, well, how about cotton bags? He said, you'd have to use a cotton bag 20,000 times in order for it to pay for itself the effect that it has on the environment. Okay. The cotton bag is grown with cotton, and then to take the cotton and harvest the cotton, the amount of CO2. He just is a numbers guy. He says, what creates the least amount of damage for the environment? And the answer is plastic.
Okay, so the question, though, is plastic compostable? And the answer is no, and paper is. So if you're going back to, you got to grow the tree.
Plastic is absolutely recyclable.
Well, not plastic straws.
Okay.
That's the problem here. And so that's why they're going with the straws. They're doing paper straws because the paper straws are compostable.
I'll just tell you, from being on a city council and having people look at an issue like this, I think we should probably get rid of plastic straws and bags. I mean, nobody wants to look at the real numbers. I used to bring it up and they would gavel me down. Imagine that.
Could I get a gavel, Jacob? By the way, I do think that there is one solution to what to do with all your straws.
Yeah, yeah.
This one woman has decided that she's going to ship millions of them, as they get rid of them, to a Netherlands company that makes furniture out of plastic.
Send it to Sri Lanka.
They just get rid of it, right? They pollute.
They destroy the ocean.
The great thing about the Dutch is they make something out of nothing.
Oh, do they?
Plastic furniture. That'll be the new trend.
You got to give up on this Netherland thing you have. It is just, now it's awkward. All right. Sarah Sanders. God wanted Trump to become president. When did she say this?
Yesterday or the day before.
Does it kind of, in a way, blow your mind that, someone like Donald Trump, who is sitting in the Oval Office, I mean, I know you can list the accomplishments, but at the same time, just from a spiritual perspective, there are a lot of Christians that believe for such a time as this.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times, and I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
Okay. If you believe that God has a hand in everything, then you say, well, apparently God chose Trump over, what's her name?
So Hillary. How quickly they forget Hillary Clinton.
She's got more to say.
Really?
Okay. 56 seconds. Yes or no, okay. Jacob? Play
this
or
is
not.
About a different topic, so we can.
Talked about she doesn't do press conferences. Do you care about that? No, you stick to the God stuff.
Yeah, okay. This idea that the problem with this approach, and I know there is, there's a segment of religious thought that does think that everything that happens for a reason, which just means that she then has to justify everything that happens: school shootings, World War II, nuclear explosions. I mean, all these kinds of things. It doesn't seem like a very well thought out position. Mm-hmm. But if she thinks that God has somehow selected Donald Trump, then of course any attack on Donald Trump she's going to see as an attack on God. Uh-huh. Whereas you could argue that the attacks on Donald Trump are also then God inspired. It's not really. It's like this tautological argument. It's not going to really go anywhere if you believe the way she believes.
Well, listen, there she goes. She's entitled to have her opinion. First Amendment protects her to be able to practice her religion wherever she wants. All right. And I mean, there are probably some people that believe that God had a hand in that.
Well, in fact, I've heard this from religious reporters go on the air. They talk about the fact that there is a segment of believers that feel like God uses imperfect people to perfect his ways. And so that's their justification for voting for somebody who's kind of a scalawag by religious moral standards. But if he's doing moral good by getting, more justices on the Supreme Court, that's how they justify that. And they say God works in mysterious ways, and that's their justification for supporting Trump.
You could also do, is this for real or not, this Newsweek? Is that a real cover? The most hilarious and upsetting Obama as deity metaphors, that God, he was awesome. The gospel of Barack, the people used to say that he had a halo on some of them, and then the God of all times. It's a sort of a funny thing. So he's not God.
More secular.
Right. Trump as God, but God having a hand in getting Donald Trump elected. By the way, does God choose football teams?
Hell no.
Right, because he lets the Patriots win, right? Okay. Let's see. Of the three remaining, Domino's rewards customer for buying pizza. You like that one?
Jeff Bezos
launches investigation into leaked text when Lauren Sanchez, that killed his marriage. So the question is, the stuff that went out was private stuff between he and his paramour. He was married, and somebody got it and then released it. It looked like Lauren Sanchez sent them to a friend, right? Is that what happened?
I don't know how this this happened. All he knows is there's a leak, and so now he has launched his private team of investigators to track this down.
Oh.
When I first heard this, I thought, oh, my God, just give it a rest. You got caught. Don't worry about how you got caught. You got caught. But they say that he's very serious about this, and the first suspicion was that his phone was hacked. Mm-hmm. So they looked at all the possibilities, and they decided, okay, no, that's not right. The second thing, this is the one I found most disturbing. Imagine if you're Lauren Sanchez. They investigated whether Lauren Sanchez herself might have leaked them to the press in order to ruin his marriage and get him on board with her.
Uh-oh.
And they after a serious investigation, they've established that isn't the fact. So the third theory and the hunch that they're running with right now is he thinks that it was politically inspired because where were the emails leaked to? National Enquirer. We've already established that David Pecker has a relationship. The owner of National Enquirer had a relationship, a pro-Trump relationship with him to buy stories, to squelch stories, that maybe this was seen as a political hit by Trump supporters on Jeff Bezos, the owner of The Washington Post. So that's the latest theory.
I thought it was that she got him and shared him with a friend.
Mm.
No. All right. Well, there you go on that one. Swedes like it hot. We're not going to be able to get to this. Can we get to it in 2 minutes without having the FCC come after us?
Yeah, I think so if we do it really quickly.
They like erotic audiobooks. It's all the rage in Sweden. So we have them reading it, but we don't know if it's erotic or not. So what we have decided to do, well, we assume it's erotic, but we don't know what they're saying.
Actually, we assume it's not erotic because we wanted to be safe and make sure we didn't put something too salacious on the air in Swedish. So we're going to make something not erotic sound erotic by a great soundtrack.
Okay, so I will play the reading of Swedish. Someone reading some Swedish literature.
And I can play the music.
Ja, det kunde han tänka, som bara såg stugan I sommarens värme.
If that's erotic, sounds fairly mechanical now.
Yes, I höstens skönhet.
Just wait.
Men något helt annat var det på vintern. Då låg djungeln gömd under snödrivorna och den lilla gångstigen som ledde ner emot dalen var halad is. Då vågade sig ingen upp på höjderna, men allt omkring var kolsvart, kall ensamhet. Väggarna var inte synnerligt tjock.
Okay, stop. Is it any wonder that audiobook sales have nearly doubled in Sweden because of erotic takes like that?
The weird thing is, if we played it, we don't know what they're saying.
Right.
But somebody who's Swedish would then have to be offended and then contact the FCC saying they were playing music or playing reading erotic literature.
That's right.
Okay. And using words that the FCC. Now, does the FCC ban all words of all language or English language?
I don't think so.
I think only English.
Yeah, so we
play
can swear
it
in French.
Get the dirty stuff.
We need
out
to find
here.
The,
we got
to
get our horny Swedish audience up. Sales is coming to me.
That's
we need
right.
more horny Swedes.
Well, you know, you can never underestimate the Tom and Curly audience. We have the most sophisticated audience out there in Radio Land. I bet there are Swedish speakers right now. Sweating.
All right. We handled that well, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we did. I love it.
Honestly, my the FCC segment. There's English. Do they also outlaw other? I can't imagine.
No, I don't think so. We'll get
Andrew.
Our crack Andrew on it.
Find out.
I'll find out.
We're right back. Hey, here we go. Michael Shute Bingo. Know-it-all quiz coming to you. That's tomorrow. One person gets on the phone to get on the air, answer all the questions we ask you, and get how many right tomorrow, Tom?
It all depends on who's playing.
That's true. If you side with me, Tom says you're below average intelligence. You only need to have two right. If you go with Tom, you need to have four or five. Your chance to win two tickets. Mariners host Boston for their opening series. Wow, tickets already for baseball. This is their year. Don't forget, they are still mathematically in it for 2019.
And this year, they're not even trying.
Building year.
Yeah.
All right. Get a chance to see them down at the Link, the Clink, the T, the Mobile, the, what are they? The Smobile?
T-Mobile Park.
T-Mobile Park.
Why are you guys talking all over my song?
Oh, hey, it's Rachel Bell.
It's a nice song.
Suddenly, Rachel Bell has got more time on her hands. It's good to have you here. Sitting around the office. She had a sign the other day that says, we'll talk.
For work.
For work. So, here she is. Hey, Belle.
Hey, thanks for taking pity on me and putting me on your show.
I don't know where you find your stories, but step it up. No, I'm only kidding. No, I like the fact that you've talked to somebody who has decided that it would be, now would be a good time. It's January. What was January?
Dryuary.
Dryuary. So, as we're heading into February and people are going to get the drink back on again, this guy has some advice for them.
Yeah, there's a guy named Shaughnessy Bishop Stahl. Very nice long name. And he has this new book. It's called Hungover, The Morning After and One Man's Quest for a Cure. And he spent the last 10 years, he said it was, quote, research, that he was researching hangover cures that are ancient and modern, trying them all out and trying to decide if there's anything that can actually cure a hangover. So here are a couple of the things that he tried.
There's the ancient Anglo-Saxon remedy of putting hemlock in your socks and walking around all day. There's a old Puerto Rican cures involving putting a wedge of a lime in your armpit and squeezing it.
That's how you make a stinky margarita, folks.
Right there.
So in order to tell you more about this, I want to tell you what a hangover actually is, because then you'll understand these cures. So when you drink
biology
too much.
Class.
What's that?
Biology class.
Exactly. By someone who hasn't taken biology since 1994. You're going to learn a lot.
Okay.
I summarized. So when you drink too much, your body's immune system overreacts and it starts to fight against what it considers dangerous toxicity. And so what happens is your cells and your internal organs get very inflamed. Mm-hmm. And that makes it impossible to let nutrients and liquids sink into your organs again. So if
inflamed
you...
Inflamed organs.
Inflamed. Mm-hmm. That's my punk band. Ooh.
I'm sorry.
Not that organ. Like your liver and stuff.
She's not Swedish, is she?
Keep going.
So if you've ever had a greasy spoon diner breakfast the morning after you drank, you are on the right track. I feel like I'm doing my John Tesh, you know, hangover cures over here. Yeah. So there is something in eggs that actually, in chicken eggs, that actually does do something to help with the hangover. And there's something in carcinogens, like in burnt toast. So, you know, people take charcoal pills to try to get the toxins out. So he says if you eat eggs and burnt toast and have some kind of electrolyte, you can help feel better a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only one thing you can do to actually get rid of your hangover immediately.
And one of the things I did was jump off.
Sorry, this is what he did when he was in Vegas with the hangover doctor.
And one of the things I did was jump off the Stratosphere, which is, I think, one of the tallest freestanding buildings in the world. And you jump off it, attach these cords, and it kind of blew the hangover right out of me. And that's when I started doing more experiments around adrenaline.
So after you jumped, was your hangover just gone?
Yeah, that one seemed to almost entirely reboot my system, much in the same way as it did when I found these glacial lakes to jump into, where it's basically sub-zero water, so it's water that should be frozen, and so it drives your body into an extreme state of adrenaline, similar to jumping off a tall building. It's hard to replicate those massive doses of adrenaline without a spike to your veins, but there seemed to be a point at which a sort of rebooting effect would happen.
And when you have a hangover, the last thing you want to do is, like, get in a race car or jump in a glacial lake or go to Vegas and jump off a tall building.
So if you played Russian roulette, you might be able to get rid of your hangover.
You can scare it out of you.
That's what it feels like.
Well, it makes me think of this must have been created for humans biologically, because, you know, I'm a biology expert here.
Right.
Like back in the day, you know, if you had to run from a predator, you had to suddenly be anything you drank or ate, or if you were sick, like that all had to just get out of you so you could run as fast as you could, right?
True. Yeah. I did, a friend of mine when I was in high school, I got wicked hangover, and he just said, go jump in the ocean. Jumped in the ocean. It was freezing cold. It was early June, Ocean City, New Jersey.
So
and then it came out. It was like, bang, it was better. It's gone.
Shock to your system.
Yeah. And I've done that before. I've jumped in Pine Lake.
Yeah.
New Year's Day. If you have too much to drink on New Year's Day,
well,
people do the polar bear plunge. It really works.
Oh,
it does
that
work.
Is the
or a super duper cold shower if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll take down the inflammation of your internal organs.
Certainly will.
And then he made his own salute. It's like if you buy his book, it's called Hungover. He mixes some.
Don't need to now.
No, we don't need to. We really don't. Yeah, so there you have it. Are you going to get real drunk tomorrow because you're done with dryuary?
Yeah, I am a. If I drink two Bud Lights, I get a hangover. So I know one Bud Light is my limit.
Have you ever thought of drinking better beer?
No, it's cheap. I like it. I'm one step up from Natty Light. or Keystone, which is the official
drink. That's what I drank in college.
Yes, the softball, the women's softball, college softball teams, the official beer is Keystone or Keystone Light.
I liked Keystone Ice.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. All right. Did you give up booze for January?
No.
Okay. Tom?
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah, this story applies to none of us.
Yeah, that's right.
It's very relevant. I like to bring relevant stories. Yeah.
But of course, we didn't ask the two millennials here.
No, I'm not going to ask
Jacob
them.
And Andrew.
One last story, because this will sweep across here. So, Jacob and Andrew, I will assume neither one of you cook?
Not terribly often.
You don't often. So, you probably do a lot of takeout? Andrew, a lot of takeout?
I try to cook as much as I can.
I know, but do you that's not the question, or the answer to the question. Do you do takeout?
Sometimes.
Okay.
There's also an option in between takeout and cooking, which is just like
frozen Trader Joe's food.
Yes. Exactly. Okay.
So Seattle spends more on takeout than any other city.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. So we spend on average $2,500. That's a $210 a month habit. But I was looking back at an old article that Gene Balk, the FYI guy, did for Seattle Times 2 years ago, and he broke down how much people spend in all of King County. People in Bellevue spend the most. Let's see, $6,000 a month is what it says the average Bellevue
household spouse.
Yeah, but I think what it is too is because in Queen Anne, the neighborhood that spends the most is Queen Anne. I think it's neighborhoods with people who probably are millennials and work at tech companies. These are the people who aren't cooking so much.
So is this a distinction? So takeout is different from restaurants. I would assume that the restaurant fare would be equal to the takeout fare. In other words, people that don't have time to cook or don't want to cook or have the money to make it so they don't have to save money by cooking.
Actually, you're right. The Bellevue people, that was takeout and eating in restaurants.
Okay.
And then the first number was just takeout. But I'm reading this book right now by Michael Pollan called Cooked. And he says, it's so interesting because in the time when the Food Network started to become really popular, and it still is, people love to watch cooking.
Yeah.
The more we like to watch cooking, the less cooking we actually do of our own.
Really?
We just watch it as a sport instead of doing it ourselves. And so many people, especially in Seattle, live by themselves now. So I think a lot of people just don't think it's worth it to cook for themselves, and so they just get takeout.
Mm. I went through a phase where I went out, like bought the fish, brought it home, put it in the thing when I was living alone in Philadelphia. And I would, you know, make myself a nice little meal with fresh beans and stuff. Then after a while, I thought, what am I doing? Then I'd sit it down on the table and sit there by myself. I know, I was all grown up.
Yeah. But the idea is, it's not worth the effort. That's the thing. I took a cooking class.
It is worth
the
effort.
And it's like, you spend all this time. And you go, I could have just gone to a restaurant and paid $20 for it. And instead, I spent 3 hours making it.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Not nearly
good point.
Well, part of what they say is your health. You know, when you eat out, another John Tesh tip, when you eat out, you consume more fat, calories, and sodium than you would if you made it at home. So,
I'm sure
if your health isn't worth it, Tom.
No. Does it look like it's worth it to me?
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
She said, you're welcome for me.
The music up
to get her out of here. Welcome.
Wait, that crappy music you're playing right now is better than what I got for Rachel?
He has interesting taste. Last week he played that like Bow Chicka Wow Wow thing, and this is like very electric. What is this?
I don't know.
Alan Hackshaw and Brian Bennett.
Hackshaw and Bennett.
We'll be right back. Online Trading Academy text line 989973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line 989973. Okay. Fun to have Rachel Bell come in.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So, by the way, everybody, it goes, I sit here, Tom sits there. This is outside the studio. And Rachel sits right in our little pod there. So it's just the three of us in our own little neighborhood.
Anyway, yes.
It's quite talky. Quite chatty. Let's see. We were going to talk about Starbucks and Howard Schultz, but I'll just tell. Tom asked me at the beginning, I think at the 10 o'clock hour, Rachel or Ursula had mentioned, why have I become sainted and why did I decide to sign up for hospice care? And here's why. So 2 years ago, I was in the Issaquah Cafe and I saw a guy. He recognized me and I said, he goes, you probably don't remember me. You meet lots of different people. I said, he told me his name. I'll change it for the show. He said, I'm Jim. And I said, oh, hey, Jim. How you doing? Good, good. And then he said, actually, I'm not doing good. I'm going to be dead in 3 months. And I said, can you sit down and have a cup of coffee with myself and my son? And he said, yeah. And he sat there, Tom, and I made him walk me through the day of the diagnosis. I wanted to know the temperature outside. I wanted to know how he got there. I wanted to know how he got home. Mm-hmm. And I made him walk me through, like, the day of the diagnosis, and then everything that occurred after that. And it was pretty much repetitive until about 6-7 days after the diagnosis. He said, I woke up and I suddenly realized I don't give an S about anything. Mm-hmm. And I am free. This is the freest I've ever been in my entire life. I realize what's important. My kid is important. My wife is important. And all the other stuff is not important. The things that I worried about don't mean anything. The stuff that I thought was so important doesn't mean anything. He said, I don't care. Go ahead and judge me. And I don't care one lick about people's judgment of me. And he goes, and I am free. I'm free to live the last 3 months of my life. And when the guy left, and I said to Ry, I said, so see, there's great sort of messages mm-hmm. about life for the people. You've got one foot in with the living and then one foot towards the dying. And it's in that split, that abyss, to connect those with stories I thought were quite profound. And I want to, because the next big thing in my life will be my death. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to sort of recenter myself. So in a selfish way, I'm doing this hospice because I myself want to grow. And have it a priority shift. And then at the same time, all I have to do is sit there and listen, which is what I do with you every day. So
that's right. And that's some kind of penance.
So that's why I'm doing it. Yeah. And I did Evergreen has one of the finest hospice care programs. They've got 25 volunteers signed up with some of the nicest people in the world. And, you know, here you go. It's going to be really difficult. Every person that came in that has done hospice care or as a volunteer told us, you will cry every single time. Wow. They said, even you normally not at the bedside, but as you're driving away, and you'll need to take a couple of weeks or months off before you get that next patient that you're going to be part of. But I'm looking forward to, you know, just becoming, I don't know, more realistic about what's important in life. So that's why.
And this is all volunteer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is not so. That I think goes to the essence of the goodness of what you're doing. You're going to help yourself in the process of helping other people, which is, I hear, the best way to help yourself. Oh. Help others.
Wow. Thanks, Tom.
Still not quite a saint.